This is the fourth day of this January 2011 seven-day session. We'll resume reading from our text, the collected works of Chinul, translated with an introduction by Robert Buswell, Jr. We're in a chapter called Secrets on Cultivating the Mind. And we have a question here from one of Chinul's monks. You talked about seeing the nature, but when there is true seeing of the nature, the person becomes an enlightened sage and should be able to perform magic and miracles. He would be different from other people. How is it then that among those who cultivate the mind nowadays, not one can display these spiritual powers and transformation bodies? Chinul, you should not utter absurdities lightly. To be unable to differentiate the perverse from the noble is to be deluded and confused. Nowadays, you people who are training on the path chat about truth with your mouth, but in your minds you only shrink from it and end up falling into the error of underestimating yourselves by thinking that you do not share in the Buddha nature. This is all that you are doubting. You train on the path, but do not know the proper sequence of practice. You talk about truth, but do not distinguish the root from the branches. This is called wrong view. It is not called cultivation. You are not only deceiving yourselves, you are deceiving others too. How can you not be on your guard against this? Well, Zen has always taken a dim view of magic and miracles. It has nothing to do with relieving suffering to have such powers. This part of the question where he says such a person, an enlightened person, would be different from other people. Different, yes, but often not in a way that is obvious to the ordinary person. There's an old saying in Zen, nothing distinguishes the enlightened person. By that is meant, there's nothing special, no special appearance, no special functioning of an enlightened person. This is considered in Zen to be one of the more advanced states, to have this transparency where you completely blend in with other people. I'm reminded of the description of Yasutani Roshi in the Three Pillars of Zen. As I remember it, it's something about him just taking the subway, wearing tennis shoes, and just completely blending in with people of every other kind. Now, you can be sure that the way he experiences the world, reality, is vastly different. But it's not, this difference is not something that would be obvious to people with ordinary vision. And it's considered just a waste of time to be monkeying around with so-called magic and miracles. Chinul continues, now There are many approaches to the path, but essentially they are included in the twofold approach of sudden awakening and gradual cultivation. Although sudden awakening, sudden cultivation has been advocated, this is the entrance for people of the highest faculties. This would mean people who just sprang out of, right, in their first sesshin or first sitting, came to awakening without any lengthy practice behind it, cultivation behind it. But he says if you were to probe their pasts, you would see that their cultivation has been based for many lives on the insights gained in a previous awakening. Now, in this life, after gradual permeation, these people hear the Dharma and awaken. In one instant, their practice is brought to a sudden conclusion. But if we try to explain this according to the facts, then sudden awakening, sudden cultivation is also the result of an initial awakening and its subsequent cultivation. Consequently, this twofold approach of sudden awakening and gradual cultivation is the track followed by thousands of sages. Hence, of all the sages of old, there were none who did not first have an awakening, subsequently cultivate it, and finally, because of their cultivation, gain realization. Notice the distinction he's making here between a first awakening and later gaining realization. Whereby the word realization is reserved for real thoroughgoing enlightenment. First awakening, on the other hand, would be something much more tenuous, where one just catches a glimpse of the formlessness of form. It may be genuine enough. It's not just an idea. It's not conceptual. It's in the body, but it's very faint. And this is the normal, in almost all cases of a first awakening, getting through one's koan, that's what it is. This so-called sudden awakening, sudden cultivation, the fact that only a few names spring to mind supports how rare it is. I think of I heard that an introductory workshop that Harada Roshi gave when he was using a chalkboard. And he drew an enso, that is a calligraphic circle, the Zen circle that we have painted here at the end of the hallway here in the north building. He drew this with a chalk on the chalkboard, and one of the participants had a kensho just in seeing that. There's the story of Flora Courtois, the college student in the 1940s. At University of Michigan, who had quite a deep awakening experience and didn't know what it was. She didn't know anything about Buddhism. She didn't know anything about Zen. She didn't know anything about awakening. She just had one. It would seem plausible enough that the explanation for such a quick opening would be practice or cultivation in previous lifetimes, that where it came to fruition without any practice in this lifetime. He goes on, the so-called magic and miracles you mentioned manifest because of the gradual permeation of cultivation based on an initial awakening. It should not be said that they appear simultaneously with that awakening. So he's saying that this would be a byproduct of practice after awakening, that these some of these paranormal powers, psychic powers, can arise. As it is said in the sutras, and then he quotes, the noumenon is awakened too suddenly and is forged in accordance with this awakening. Phenomena cannot be removed suddenly. They are brought to an end step by step. In other words, the awakening is the awakening to this transcendent realm that is beyond any phenomena we can imagine, beyond what we know of space, beyond what we know of time, beyond anything that we can conceive of. It's literally inconceivable. But then after that, the realm of phenomena, of integrating the experience of insight, integrating that into one's life and all of one's working with the phenomena of life and death, that happens later. When he says phenomena cannot be removed suddenly, they are brought to an end step by step. We don't want to certainly take literally that their phenomena are brought to an end. We can't get away from phenomena. Phenomena include everything, every single experience or thought or feeling or change or anything is phenomena. So they're, when he says brought to an end, he means seen through more and more thoroughly. Seeing the no-thingness of things. Who would want to remove phenomena? What could that possibly mean? That's removing breathing, eating. For this reason, Kuai Feng, he's a great Chinese master, Kuai Feng, in a profound explanation of the meaning of initial awakening, subsequent cultivation, said, this is a wonderful analogy, although we know that a frozen pond is entirely water, the sun's heat is necessary to melt it. Although we awaken to the fact that an ordinary person is enlightened, the power of Dharma is necessary to make it permeate our cultivation. When that pond has melted, the water flows freely and can be used for irrigation and cleaning. When falsity is extinguished, the mind will be numinous and dynamic, and then its function of penetrating brightness will manifest. So, usually, after an initial awakening, the pond is not flowing freely and can't be used for irrigation and cleaning. That is, our awakening is not functioning effectively in our life. There's still a gap between what we've seen and our ability to live out of it. We keep getting swatted by old habit forces, emotional habit forces, forces of clinging and reacting to people and to situations. It's often said that in Zen, a first awakening is really the beginning of serious practice. The serious part being making it real in our lives, functioning out of it, responding out of this understanding of no self. since everyone here has been to an introductory workshop, you know the story, so I'll make it very brief, the story about Harada Roshi told Kaplow-san that as a young man he had a terrible temper, and he thinks he would have killed someone had he not gotten into Zen, but he got into Zen, he channeled that energy into his practice, and he did have a Kensho, a first experience. But he said then it took him 10 years after that first awakening before he felt he was free of his anger. Question. You have said that this twofold approach of sudden awakening, gradual cultivation, is the track followed by thousands of sages. But if awakening is really sudden awakening, what need is there for gradual cultivation? And if cultivation means gradual cultivation, then how can you speak of sudden awakening? Chino. First, let us take sudden awakening. When the ordinary person is deluded, he assumes that the four great elements are his body and the false thoughts are his mind. This is, just to say, this is true. Before awakening, we don't know anything of the mind except the stuff of the mind, our thoughts and feelings and emotions. But that's just in the realm of mental phenomena. There is this other realm that the translator is rendering as the noumenon, or we could say the absolute, the ineffable, the transcendent. He does not know that his own nature is the true Dharma body. He does not know that his own numinous awareness is the true Buddha. He looks for enlightenment outside his mind. While he is thus wandering aimlessly, the entrance to the road might by chance be pointed out by a wise advisor, a teacher. If in one thought he then follows back the light of his mind to its source and sees his own original nature, he will discover that the ground of this nature is innately free of defilement, and that he himself is originally endowed with the non-outflow wisdom nature, which is not a hair's breadth different from that of all the enlightened ones. Hence it is called sudden awakening. To repeat, he will discover that the ground of this nature is innately free of defilement. This is the staggering thing we discover through awakening, is that there is only this enlightened nature. There aren't two natures. There is only this enlightened nature. It makes no sense, does it? How can that be? When we examine ourselves and we see what's happening in the world, there is only this enlightened nature. And everyone is equally endowed with it. Next, let us consider gradual cultivation. Although he has awakened to the fact that his original nature is no different from that of the enlightened ones, the beginningless habit energies are extremely difficult to remove suddenly, and so he must continue to cultivate while relying on this awakening. Through this gradual permeation, his endeavors reach completion. He constantly nurtures the sacred embryo, and after a long time, he becomes a sage. Hence, it is called gradual cultivation. There's a footnote here. For this term, nurtures the sacred embryo. This refers to the practitioner during the three stages of worthiness, whatever that is. In Zen texts, the phrase constantly nurture the sacred embryo refers to subsequent cultivation after the initial awakening, during which the inchoate embryo of Buddhahood is nurtured until finally the fetus matures and is born into the family of the Buddhas. I'm suddenly remember what Roshi Kaplow said to me in Doksan when he passed me on Mu. He said, you're like a kitten now. Your eyes are still mostly closed, it just ever so slightly open. Now you have to grow up. Perhaps the most significant aspect of this gradual cultivation that follows awakening is relearning to respond to others, to situations, out of one's innate compassion and selflessness, because our tendencies to react out of self-centeredness, out of self-interest, are so profoundly ingrained in us. It takes so long and so much work to reorient and develop this capacity that is common to all of us. We all have it, to not react out of just pure self-interest, but to think bigger, to relate to all beings as oneself. Back in the late 60s, maybe early 70s, late 60s, I think, and at Arnold Park, the Doksan rushes were just wild. There were only the sesshins would be pretty big, 50 people maybe, more or less, but there were only two groups, and actually, originally, there may have been no groups, just one group. And the bell rang, and all hell broke loose to get out those little doors that were about the quarter the size of these. And sometimes there would be people get trampled, and, you know. And I wasn't around in the late 60s, but I was told this story that has just always stuck with me. Is one of the few people who, in those days, who had any awakening at all, she was rushing with everyone else to Doksan, and someone went down. And instead of, you know, jumping over the person or just tearing up the stairs, she stopped and she shouted to someone else to help her, and they lifted him up and got him on his feet so he can keep going. And then Chinhu uses another analogy. This process, this nurturing the sacred embryo after awakening, this process can be compared to the maturation of a child. From the day of its birth, a baby is endowed with all the sense organs, just like everyone else, but its strength is not yet fully developed. It is only after many months and years that it will finally become an adult. We know now that the brain of an infant is far from fully developed, and in fact, the brain isn't fully developed until into the 20s, but we get his point. Question. When the superior person hears Dharma, he understands easily. Average and inferior people, however, have doubt and confusion. Could you describe some expedients so that the deluded too can enter into enlightenment? Expedients is one of these words that is probably hardly used in wider discourse other than Buddhist vocabulary, but it really means any kind of devices or methods that we can use in our practice. Chinu says, the path is not related to knowing or not knowing. You should get rid of the mind which clings to its delusion and looks forward to enlightenment, and listen to me. Since all things are like dreams or phantoms, deluded thoughts are originally calm, and the sense spheres are originally void. At the point where all things are void, the numinous awareness is not obscured. That is to say, this mind of void and calm, numinous awareness is your original face. It is also the Dharma seal transmitted without a break by all the Buddhas of the three time periods, the successive generations of patriarchs, and the wise advisors of this world. In other words, we all have in common this mind of awareness. No one is without awareness. There are different degrees. We can say some people are more mindful in that sense, and they're more aware of what's going on around them, perhaps. They're more aware of other people's feelings and the effect they're having on other people. But the fundamental awareness is our birthright. This is the Buddha mind. There's a koan in the Mumonkan where the monk by the name of Seize comes to the master Sozan and says, I am poor and alone. I beg you to please make me rich. And the master says, Venerable Seize, yes? You've just drunk 3 cups of the finest wine of China, but say your lips have not yet been moistened. Hey, yes. Bankei, the great Japanese master Bankei, explores this. He talks about hearing the sound of a crow, the sound of a dog barking, the wind in the trees. The fact that we hear that without having directed our attention to it, just spontaneously hearing it, is evidence of this Buddha mind, this pure original awareness. What he calls the unborn Buddha mind, meaning it's beyond anything, beyond arising and ceasing, beyond birth and death, beyond change. just a minute ago we read where Chinyu says it's not a matter of knowing or not knowing. This path is not related to knowing or not knowing. That can sound very puzzling. What does that mean? It's not related to knowing or not knowing. Certainly not knowing as we normally think of it. Not knowing, the knowing that stands in contradistinction to not knowing. Because the knowing is experiencing directly. Question. In our case, what is this mind of void and calm, numinous awareness? Chinyu. What has just asked me this question is precisely your mind of void and calm, numinous awareness. Why not trace back its radiance rather than search for it outside? For your benefit, I will now point straight to your original mind so that you can awaken to it. Clear your minds and listen to my words. From morning to evening, throughout the 12 periods of the day, during all your actions and activities, whether seeing, hearing, laughing, talking, whether angry or happy, whether doing good or evil, ultimately, who is it that is able to perform all these actions? Speak! If you say that it is the physical body which is acting, then at the moment when one's life comes to an end, even though the body has not yet decayed, how is it that the eyes cannot see, the ears cannot hear, the nose cannot smell, the tongue cannot talk, the body cannot move, the hands cannot grasp, and the feet cannot run? He's here dismissing the notion that it's our body in and of itself, has this sentience. You should know that what is capable of seeing, hearing, moving, and acting has to be your original mind. It is not your physical body. Furthermore, the four elements which make up the physical body are by nature void. They are like images in a mirror or the moon's reflection in water. How can they be clear and constantly aware, always bright and never obscured? And, upon activation, be able to put into operation sublime functions as numerous as the sands of the Ganges. For this reason, it is said, drawing water and carrying firewood are spiritual powers and sublime functions. These words of the great Chinese layman Pong are sometimes used to respond to those who ask about magic and miracles. After awakening, we realize that drawing water and carrying firewood and operating a vacuum cleaner and scrubbing a pot are spiritual powers and sublime functions. Doing laundry, shoveling snow, mowing the lawn, driving, stirring the soup, chopping vegetables, going to the bathroom, crying, laughing, are all spiritual powers and sublime functions. goes on, this is your pure mind essence of void and calm numinous awareness. This pure void and calm mind is that mind of outstanding purity and brilliance of all the Buddhas of the three time periods. It is that enlightened nature which is the original source of all sentient beings. One who awakens to it and safeguards that awakening will then abide in the unitary, unmoving liberation. One who is deluded and turns his back on it passes among the six worlds, wandering in samsara for vast numbers of kalpas. Although there is a distinction between delusion and awakening, in their basic source they are one. As it is said, the word dharma means the mind of the sentient being. But as there is neither more of this void and calm mind in the sage, nor less of it in the ordinary person, it is also said, in the wisdom of the sage it is no brighter, hidden in the mind of the ordinary person it is no darker. Since there is neither more of it in the sage nor less of it in the ordinary person, how are the Buddhas and patriarchs any different from other people? The only thing that makes them different is that they can protect their minds and thoughts, nothing more. Interesting word, protect. Back to this nurturing. Knowing how to use this marvelous gift of attention with which we are all endowed. Using our attention in ways that are wholesome and that help us and others and not in unwholesome ways. He goes on, this is the life force of all the Buddhas and patriarchs. Have no further doubts about that. Since it has no form or shape, how can it be large or small? And here now he proceeds to demolish every kind of way we can come up with of characterizing this true nature. Since it cannot be large or small, how can it have limitations? Since it has no limitations, it cannot have inside or outside. Since there is no inside or outside, there is no far or near. As there is no far or near, there is no here or there. As there is no here or there, there is no coming or going. As there is no coming or going, there is no birth or death. As there is no birth or death, there is no past or present. As there is no past or present, there is no delusion or awakening. As there is no delusion or awakening, there is no ordinary person or sage. As there is no ordinary person or sage, there is no purity or impurity. Since there is no impurity or purity, there is no right or wrong. Since there is no right or wrong, names and words do not apply to it. Since none of these concepts apply, all sense bases and sense objects, all deluded thoughts, even forms and shapes and names and words are all inapplicable. Hence, how can it be anything but originally void and calm and originally no thing? question. Once the noumenon is awakened to, no further steps are involved. Why then do you speak of subsequent cultivation, gradual permeation, and gradual perfection? Chinul, earlier the meaning of gradual cultivation subsequent to awakening was fully explained. But since your feeling of doubt persists, it seems that I will have to explain it again. Clear your minds and listen carefully. For innumerable kalpas without beginning up to the present time, ordinary people have passed between the five destinies, coming and going between birth and death. They obstinately cling to self, and over a long period of time, their natures have become thoroughly permeated by false thoughts, inverted views, ignorance, and the habit energies. Although coming into this life, they might suddenly awaken to the fact that their self-nature is originally void and calm and no different from that of the enlightened ones, these old habits are difficult to eliminate completely. Consequently, when they come into contact with either favorable or adverse objects, then anger and happiness or propriety or impropriety blaze forth. Their defilements are no different from before. If they do not increase their efforts and apply their power through the help of prajna wisdom, how will they ever be able to counteract ignorance and reach the place of great rest and repose? As it is said, and then he quotes someone here, although the person who has suddenly awakened is the same as the enlightened ones, the habit energies which have built up over many lives are deep-rooted. The wind ceases, but the waves still surge. And he quotes Da Yi, the Chinese great master Da Yi. Often gifted people can break through this affair and achieve sudden awakening without expending a lot of strength. Then they relax and do not try to counteract the habit energies and deluded thoughts. Finally, after the passage of many days and months, they simply wander on as before and are unable to avoid samsara. Chinul, so how could you neglect subsequent cultivation simply because of one moment of awakening? After awakening, you must be constantly on your guard. If deluded thoughts suddenly appear, do not pursue them. Reduce them and reduce them again until you reach the unconditioned. Then and only then will your practice reach completion. This is the practice of herding the ox, which all wise advisors in the world have practiced after awakening. So for those who understandably wonder how it is that Zen teachers can create so much havoc in their wanton disregard of the precepts and so forth, this is the answer. You would think, okay, well, sure, maybe after an awakening, but aren't Zen teachers supposed to be further along this path and beyond such things? Well, it would be nice, wouldn't it? We'll stop now and recite the four vows.